So when I got started in education and many years ago, it was quite an experience as a kindergarten teacher. And so in all of my kindergarten experience, I always had the heart to like go above and beyond what is what working with low-income students. I wanted to give them the best education possible. And I knew that just what I was, the standard foundation curriculum was not going to meet their needs to get them there. So that's when I started branching out, asking for money from community organizations and nonprofits in the area and the business businesses down the street. And so from that, I decided I was going to reach out and build a community network with my classroom. And so with that, after I got my teaching 10 years experience, went into grant writing with San Antonio ISD and did that while I was getting my master's degree, and which led me into the work that I do today as with federal programs.
Wow. That is really cool to hear about how you came to be and being passionate about the work. So you talked about when you were a teacher and when you worked at the campus level. So what really was the overarching call to do this work? Like, what really made you, you're like, this is my call to being able to serve in this capacity. Like, what was that one thing that made you do that? And you may have talked about it earlier, but it was going in and out on me.
Well, it was quite by accident. When I was getting my master's degree, I applied for everything on the job board, and from assistant principal to a school dean to a principal position, and then federal programs compliance coordinator was also on the job board at the time. And then our district was under investigation for their federal programs director by the FBI for giving contracts to his wife of up to $800,000. And that's when I hit delete on my application. I said, I'm the mother of five kids. There's no way I can risk getting my certificate canceled because I don't know what to do for federal programs. So I hit delete on my application. But a week later, they called me for an interview. And I was like, what? No. I said, and I thought, okay, this position goes to the board because it's that administrative level, goes to the board. The board meeting is tonight. So I still have 4 to 6 weeks, you know, before this position will go to the board. So I said, okay, I'll go ahead and interview. So I interviewed that Wednesday night, which was the board meeting. And I get to work on the next day and they say, congratulations. The board approved you to be the federal programs compliance coordinator. And I was like, what? No, I hit delete on my application. I said, no. And so, so I said, okay, I'm just going to do this. Let's do this. And I was lost and I was so terrified to make a mistake because here we have the FBI investigating the director and one of the coordinators. And then we had an interim director trying to figure things out, and she was from special ed. So she really didn't know what she was doing. And then the other coordinator was responsible for reviewing all 99 school-wide campus payroll expenditures. And I was doing everything non-payroll. So if you can imagine 99 school-wide campuses, the funds are still coming in, but the FBI it was just terrifying. So I said, and then when I asked for training, they said, just go to the U.S. Department of Education website. Go to the state website. It's all the information's there, but it made no sense. And I said, somebody should do something. Isn't there training? And there wasn't. It was just like, here's what the law says. You have to figure out what it looks like for your district. I was like, that's not acceptable. You know, I'm a kindergarten teacher. Wow. You know, I didn't go to law school to figure this out. So that's why I say kind of by accident, I found my way in this. And so now I've written 10 books on the subject, and I have academies to help any struggling principals that they don't need to struggle anymore. It's all done for them.
That, so when you were talking about trying to learn how to navigate, I think back to my time as a principal, and I sometimes didn't quite understand when the federal grants and programs director would have a framework for us to follow, do you know? And I didn't always feel comfortable asking the questions. And most importantly, Kat, Trish, I didn't even know the correct questions to ask. And so thinking about principals, school leaders that are listening to us right now, and they don't want to seem like they don't know what they're doing in the federal grant and compensatory ed realm, what would be your first piece of advice to them?
Planning is the most important thing to have in place. If you don't have a plan on like who's going to handle the compliance, what compliance needs to be done, it's before you know it, the year's going to get ahead of you, and you're going to find yourself falling behind. Getting on the calendar, something like this is when we're going to do our annual Title I meeting, our comprehensive needs assessment we're going to do, and also learning how to combine compliance requirements, because they don't have to be done in isolation, but learning how you can integrate them into one another and have a designated person over it, responsible for that position, for all the compliance with their grants, because that way you have somebody that you can, as a principal, have oversight and monitoring, so it doesn't fall through the cracks.
So you're making me think, as a principal, my last principalship was in a small 4A district where it was me, my assistant principal, two counselors, and I feel like my secretary was like my right-hand person. Who in, you know, when principals are wearing multiple hats, who do you see in a lot of the schools that you work with? Is there like a most likely person that people tap on the shoulder to help them as a principal, or does it vary based on the campus and the district?
Yeah, I think it depends on your talent that you have, because sometimes like I was a very enthusiastic go-getter teacher. And so I love doing all of that stuff. I love being the person to kind of coordinate and get your stakeholders involved and kind of get the input. So I think it just depends on the personalities that exist in your current talent pool, because you may have a teacher who is really, you know, they really want to help and take on leadership roles. Or if you have an aspiring administrator, that's a good opportunity. Or getting an intern from like one of the universities who wants to do some observation hours. And then if sometimes you don't have the funds to pay for that specific person, but you can give them a stipend or extra duty pay. But if you're going to do that, make sure you allocate time in their schedule to actually get the work done. Because I find that's a common mistake where a counselor or an assistant principal will get delegated this role, but then they're like, well, how do I fit it in my schedule? And I think that person needs to advocate for their time and say, okay, I'm going to schedule this time for Title I, and then communicate that to their administration, so that way they can understand, like, I'm not available at this time because I'm taking care of our compliance requirements.
So I have a question for you. You just mentioned Title I. So for all those principals out there that maybe don't qualify for Title I, but they do get the compensatory ed funding source, can you tell us a little bit about how those either work together or the compliance piece goes hand in hand? Because the previous two campuses I was at, I wasn't a Title I principal, but I did have compensatory ed funds. And I know that those have very similar responsibilities as Title.
Yes. Yes. So what I would advise any principal who's not at a Title I school, if you are a successful principal, be ready, be prepared, because you could be the next Title I principal the next year. Because in a Title I school, you need to have the high performing principals should be the ones who are being assigned to work on your Title I campuses. So if you are good at your job, get ready, be prepared for it, because it could be coming your way. And all the changing demographics that we have going on in our education field today, you could have a population, they could redraw your boundary lines in your district because schools are downsizing. And then you have new restructuring of attendance boundaries. And then before you know it, you're a Title I school, you qualify. So that's one thing I would advise. Don't get set like, oh, I'm not Title I, I don't need to know this. Oh, you should always be right, because it's best practice. Having a needs assessment, having a compact, having a policy. Now with that compensatory ed, according back to your question, compensatory ed has a similar purpose and intent. So the purpose and intent of Title I is to provide a fair, high quality education and to close education achievement gaps for low income students. Well, compensatory ed in Texas has the same priority, which is to close educational achievement gaps for at-risk students. So showing that those at-risk students are coming up to the same level as your non-at-risk students academically. So with that, it's all about instructional, increasing their instructional effectiveness of the teachers and also the students to increase their academic achievement in reading and math specifically.
So thinking that we may have principals listening, and we have, at our state conference coming up, there are like a high percentage of first timers attending that state conference, which means that they are very likely within their first 1 to 3 years of the principalship. And from theory into practice, from when you go to school to become a principal, you talk about that campus needs assessment, but it does, when you're walking into a campus, that can seem like a huge task. What are some of the common challenges that principals face when leading and walking into a campus needs assessment? And can you kind of simplify and talk about the connection and the importance of it when you talk about the funding source?
Yes, I always, in my academies, I always give this little example. So my son came to me one day and he said, "Mom, I need $100. And I said, "Well, what do you need $100 for?" And he said, "Oh, well, I want to buy prom tickets. I want to go to prom." So I said, "Okay." So I gave him the cash, the $100. And he comes back from school and I said, "I'm thinking, you know, I gave you $100 today. Do you have a receipt? Do you have tickets?" And I ask him about it. He's like, "Oh, I forgot." And then I'm starting to wonder, did you really spend that money on prom tickets, or did you spend it on a new video game or a hat? I know you wanted those shoes. You know, my mind is racing. Mm-hmm. Next day he comes back, he gives me the tickets, he gives me the shows me the receipt, and then I know that the money was spent for the prom tickets. That's how the federal government is. They give the schools money, and they want to know how it is tied to the needs assessment. What is the need that this money is going to address? And so that's how the needs assessment is supposed to be a process that goes through all of the needs and then ties it to the funding, how the funds are going to be spent.
That's fair enough. That is, that's fair enough to know, is that just making sure that one, they understand the need and what it ties to academically, right? And then two, how are you going to measure the progress? Mm-hmm. And then three, how are you going to show that, that funding source actually went to achieve that goal or tie into that goal?
Absolutely.
So I'm wondering, if I am a principal and I know that math, you know, there's a certain academic area that we're really struggling with, and I can't figure out a way to really be able to support my teachers within a learning piece or a new resource. What or how, if could I go and talk to my federal grants and programs director to, or what questions or phrases or things could I ask to be able to see if, you know, if there's a way that they could help me?
Yes. Yeah, so that's where, you know, looking at your budget, where you have money allocated already. And then if a budget change needs to happen based on the need that you have for math, if it's professional development, if it's a contracted service provider to come in and do some in-person coaching, or so I would look at, you know, what budget do I have already? Because it doesn't look good on a principal if you're constantly having to make budget changes. Mm-hmm. If you don't have enough in a budget line item, that is one of the success criteria. I have it in one of my books. I have a list where it shows success criteria. Are you using the right budget codes? Do you have enough money allocated in each object code without having to make changes? And then are you expending your funds fully? Because that's another thing. Sometimes principals are like, I don't know how to spend this money. So they don't spend it. That's another problem. And so with math, like going to your federal programs director and saying, we have this need in math. Is there something that we can do? And so at the district level, they have the right to reserve funds for district level initiatives. And it could be that the funds are already available at the district level that are going to be provided outside of the school budget, which can also help to address that, the need in math. And then also looking at, like, what are other schools in the district doing, or what are other schools in the area doing that mm-hmm. are effective for math, and looking at the population you're serving and the population and finding a similar demographic that you're serving, so that way you're using an approach in math that's going to be effective for the students in your school.
Wow, that is, that's very helpful, because thinking back to when I was principal, this was probably an area that I was afraid to share, that I wasn't well versed in. And mm-hmm. I, you know, retired at 30 years. And so I want to put that out there for principals and leaders that might be listening to know that you're not alone if you don't know and understand to that level of, you know, the budget coding and things like that. So, okay, one big question. So I am a leader in a school, and I know that there are resources out there for me as a leader or my assistant principal to help move the needle with school turnaround. So say I just got my scores in again, and I know that we haven't quite made the progress that we needed, the expected progress. And so I really want to pour into our leadership team, but I didn't budget for that. So for example, you know, responsive learning, we partner with John Hines on our school turnaround series. So if I, as a leader, wanted to go in and say, I am meeting with my final TPEST evaluation, and I want to really figure out a way to sharpen my tools and my own toolbox to set up next year to be ideal within looking through our systems, are there questions that I could ask my supervisor, my assistant superintendent, or whoever's doing my evaluation on how I could utilize these type of funds to fund my own learning and growth?
Oh, that's a great question. So Title II is the primary funding source for principal and teacher professional development, because the focus is to improve student academic achievement through effective teachers and principals. So that's where the funding that you want to focus on. Title I is also an area that can also help the instructional effectiveness of the leadership and also the teachers. But Title II is going to be for specifically for principals to really help them. And so with that, I think, you know, looking at the needs assessment, going back to your needs assessment, and the thing to know about your needs assessment, it's going to be an ongoing process. It's not like you do it one time at the beginning of the year and then you're done, because as the year goes along, your needs change. And you, like one district I was working with last year, they had two principals in the school year. And the one I was meeting with was the third principal, and she'd never been a principal before. And so with that, I found that when we were doing the needs assessment, I said, well, are there any professional development needed for administration? And she just looked at me like, I'm good. And I was like, no. Think about this. You are a new principal here. You need some training. You need some coaching. You need some mentoring. And so I think looking at your, now I will say when you're doing, you're using your federal funds for leadership training and coaching, you have to make sure that the price point is within your procurement thresholds. And what I mean by that is when you're using federal funds, your district, the federal level is $10,000. Anything under $10,000, you don't have to get rate quotes or competitive bidding process. But anything over $10,000, mm-hmm. you would have to get. But your purchasing department and your federal programs department can give you a list of those either approved providers that are already on your district's list. So that way you don't have to wonder, like you submit a request and you're like, oh, this vendor's not on our list. And then the competitive process is closed. And so it can create some frustration if you're not aware of that process. But your district should have a list of approved vendors that are already on your vendor approved vendor list that you can select from. And then that way you can submit and work with your federal programs and purchasing department to make sure that the cost is one has to be reasonable and necessary, and it's well documented that it's tied the scope of work that is put together for your leadership support is tied to the purpose and intent of the funding source that's going to pay for it. For example, Title II, you're going to want something in there to say it's going to help our students achieve academically so our principals can be supported in their role and their instructional leadership role. So with all of that, you know, making sure that you get also know your purchasing deadlines, because as a principal, mm-hmm. your budget is going to shut down usually at the end of May. Sometimes they shut mm-hmm. it down earlier if you're in a larger district. But if you're not aware of those purchasing deadlines, you could say, oh, I want to go to this. And then you're like, oh, but the system just shut down last week, or last week was the last time to mm-hmm. put a requisition in for a request. So that's important to know when those deadlines are, so you can make sure, because when the budget shuts down at the end of the year, you can't make any new requests until they reopen it for the new fiscal year. So that's something to be aware of as a new principal.
Jerry, I'm curious, what was that process like for you? You've expressed feeling like you didn't know what to do or even what questions to ask, and feeling kind of like, I don't want anyone to know how little I know about this. But I'm really curious, like, as you spent more time in the principal seat and began to figure out some of that, like, what was that like for you? How did that feel for you?
Well, initially I felt very overwhelmed and, you know, trying to make sure that I was meeting each one of the deadlines and, you know, benchmarks that needed to be happen. But it's reassuring to know, and that we're able to share right now, that there are resources outside your scope of your district, because sometimes you only know what you know that's been shared within the framework of the four walls of your district, right? And so for me, it would have been liberating to know that there was another resource out there that that I had no idea. But in the realm of documenting and having the framework of meeting the timeline, initially it was a little daunting when I first started out. You learn by trial and sometimes error when you're getting the email of, have you scheduled this? Do you have the documentation for this part? And so as a principal, it's like drinking through the fire hose. And this is one part of the fire hose that can sink you. Principals lose their opportunity to be a principal on a lot of times funding issues, right? I'd say where there's money involved. And so this is a hot topic that as a leader, I felt like budgeting, budget codes, walking into the principalship was one of my weakest areas, that you don't really learn it as a principal until you walk it.
Yeah. Kish, I've got another question for you. I know we're coming up on time, but I just have this thought. As things change and shift, what would you suggest as kind of the best resource for the most up-to-date information as things kind of shift and change? Do you feel like districts themselves, like they'll probably be the place to go to understand what's relevant to you? Like, where can folks go when they know things are changing, but they don't know what the most current or relevant information is or where to get that? There's so much out there that's not always accurate. Where can folks go to get the info that they really need?
Well, one thing I recommend is looking at the state level, because with the dismantling of the U.S. Department of Education, everything's going to be focused at the state level. So the state is going to have the opportunity to create their way of doing monitoring and guidance. So there's going to be a lot of, guidance from the state. So like here in Texas, the Texas Education Agency will post a lot of webinars. They have some webinars coming up in June where you can go and see what is needed for either your upcoming allowable uses of funds or monitoring tools. And so I think that's going to be important to keep track of. I attend some attorney group conferences throughout the year. So that's how I keep abreast of it. And I know that TASA Midwinter is a good resource for principals to access information there, and TEPSA and TASSP. So those are organizations that, and TASB is going to help you with all of those, the board policies and the procedures to help you. And get a hold of your district's procedures manual for administrative procedures, because in that is going to outline how to make requests for Title I funds, for any of your federal funds, and show you what's allowable, what's not allowable, and then who are the contacts at the district. And so having that as a resource as well. But those are the organizations I would recommend staying, get on their listserv just to make sure that you get those updates. And then that's going to be the most helpful.
Wow. I am so grateful that you carved out time to be here with us, because this is super duper timely for principals. I know that they're going to want to be hearing about how does that apply to the work that they do at the campus level. I have one more little bitty question for you. So at the state level, I don't know, as a principal, here we go, you know, TEA, just saying, is this going to be like the DEAC, you know, the DEC visit, isn't that what they called it when they would come? Is this going to be under that same umbrella through special ed, all the other realms, that you would get that fantastic visit from the state in Texas?
That is a good question. I'm not sure how they're going to handle it. I think they're going to have probably more virtual check-ins. I know that now that back then when they would do those visits, it was very much, you were still on the paper-based binders, you know, collecting all that paperwork. And I think now they're going to have they use that smart sheet system for districts to upload all their documentation to. And I think what they'll do is they'll review that first and then determine if an on-site visit's going to be needed. That's what I expect might happen. But now that we're in a more digital, virtual age, that would be a little more reasonable.
I agree. Well, I just want to thank you for taking the time to be here. I know that you are, you know, the work you do is very important and valuable to so many districts and entities around the state and the nation. And so I just want to say thank you. This was take two, coming in and having a conversation about funding and how we could be able to help support our campus leaders in navigating this.
Thank you for the opportunity to be here today.
Yeah, thanks so much, Kish. You know, you were, I think, the very first person I interviewed when we kind of began to launch this. So I didn't know what I was doing at all whatsoever. And then now having Jerry here, who has experience as a school principal in Texas, and getting to hear like the real specific questions that she has for you, has just been so great. And so I just really appreciate you coming back and all of the work and help that you've given us over the years. It means so much. And we're always so excited to work with you.
And if principals have questions, they can contact you, right, Kish?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. Please do.
Yeah, we'll have a link to your website. And if there's any other specific resources that we can find links to from your website, those will also be in the description of this episode, so folks will have them real handy.
Awesome. Thank you.
All right. See you. Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.